Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name's James Henderson. I'm chairman of the gas program at OIES. And in this very fast-moving world, I think I should date this podcast, we're recording on the morning of the 12th of August, 2022. So with me today, I've got Mike Fullwood, who's one of our regular correspondents on global gas markets. Jack is on holiday this week, so I've just got Mike on his own, which is great. And we're going to talk about some of the work that Mike has done on what would happen this winter if Russian gas flows went to zero. And then we're also going to talk about what's going on in the LNG market, both around Europe, but also in Asia, and again, and look a bit further out to the future. See what might happen in 2023 as well as the winter of 2022. So, Mike, you are very welcome to the podcast as always. And let's start with the analysis that you did on the European market this winter. When you did your analysis using the Nexant global gas model, you created, I think, a control scenario and then compared it with the zero gas from Russia scenario. So, can you just talk us through what the control scenario looks like?
Yes, thank you, Jim. It's good to be back. In terms of the sort of the base case or control scenario, then I think obviously for 2022, obviously we're looking at a significant fall in European demand of about maybe 45 to 50 BCM if you include UK and Turkey in there compared to 2021. Now, part of that is this winter was mild, the winter just gone relative to 2021. So that took a fair chunk of demand away, but also obviously the high gas prices have induced demand switching, in some cases, industries just moving away from gas altogether. So that's the sort of 2022 situation. For 2023, the assumption really was that there probably wouldn't be that much change in demand relative to 2022. So we're still down about 40 to 45 BCM on the 2021 level. So that's the sort of the control case. In terms of what's happening to flows from Russia, then the Ukraine flows and the flows via Turk Stream up into Bulgaria and then on into Southeast Europe, were probably around about the sort of the current levels. Let's talk about 40 million cubic meters a day each route. And in terms of Nord Stream, obviously we're down to sort of about 30 million cubic meters a day at the moment, which is very low level of capacity. In the fourth quarter, that would maybe rise back to where two turbines effectively were operating. In the first quarter of next year, maybe back to about 60% of capacity before returning to full capacity. So the flows, mostly in 2023, would get us back to full capacity on Nord Stream. At that sort of level, then taking Nord Stream flows, Ukraine flows, and the flows via Turk Stream into Europe, we're probably roughly slightly above what we think is sort of the take or pay level under the contracts, if the contracts still sort of exist. So that's the sort of the control case.
Okay, and so in that case then, where I guess Russian flows are at least the same but probably slightly better than they are at the moment, we see some recovery through the winter. Do we get through the winter? Can the EU kind of get through with that level of flow and with the levels of gas in storage that we're expecting?
Yes. I mean, yes, just about, because with the Russia flows picking up, then that alleviates the situation somewhat compared to where we are at the moment. So if the winter is not cold, even a normal winter, we could probably just about sort of get through, assuming the LNG flows continued at the current high rates into Europe. So if China doesn't rebound back to where it was last year and the winter is normal or mild, then given the, I think Jack talked about this last week, given the relatively good storage levels we're experiencing at the moment and meeting the EU's targets by November the 1st, then we just about squeak by this winter based on that sort of scenario.
Okay, but the key assumptions to look out for obviously being the weather and LNG demand in the rest of the world.
Yeah, the short term, the weather in China.
Okay, so if that's the kind of squeak through case, What happens? Well, you tell us about the scenario about when Russian gas, you're assuming Russian gas, might get turned off, and how long for, and what happens?
Well, in terms of the way we approach the modelling, just a simple, everything from Russia is switched off from October the 1st. So Nord Stream's down to zero. The Ukraine route drops to zero as well. And the gas would still come by Turk Stream to Turkey, but the flows onward into Europe would be sort of curtailed. There could be some little leakage through possible trading. But essentially, there are no Russia flows to the EU from October the 1st. So that's the underlying assumption. And not surprisingly, as we described in the quarterly, then that leads to severe demand problems around Germany and Central Europe. I think one of the issues is that a lot of it revolves around Germany as being the largest economy and also highly dependent on Russian gas. Is what can Germany do to get more gas coming into Germany, and how can Germany then help out, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Austria, Hungary are the ones really affected. And to some extent, Italy, because Italy can obviously bring gas in and maybe project that a little bit further north. So it all depends on what happens in that sort of Central European area.
Okay, well, let's come to that in a second and perhaps focus in a bit more on the countries that are most affected. But at an overall level, obviously the EU has introduced this request for a voluntary 15% cut in gas demand. What does your model say about what the actual reduction in gas demand would have to be if there was no Russian gas? And how does that relate to kind of the EU request?
Well, the 15% number is a really good number for the whole of the EU in terms of if we lose Russian gas, then for the year as a whole, you're talking about a 60 billion cubic meter reduction in European consumption demand, which is about 15% of EU gas demand. So the EU as a whole, it's a good number, but it's heavily concentrated because of the constraints on the system. As we said in the quarter review, there's not much Spain, Portugal, Greece, even France can do to help out Germany and Central Europe, because the infrastructure is not there. You can't flow gas from west to east as readily as you can flow gas from east to west. The Norway pipes into Europe are already full up. The regas terminals at Dunkirk, Zeebrugge and Gate are already running at well over nameplate capacity. So there is no room to get more gas in. So in terms of the impacts, then what we're looking at in sort of Germany is almost a 40% reduction in demand. If we take the year as a whole, 2023, because that's probably the best way to look at it. It's obviously more concentrated in the winter, about a 40% reduction in demand, higher reduction in Slovakia and Hungary, Romania, Czech Republic, also down. Romania's not in as bad a shape as the rest because they've got their own production, but even they get hit. Austria, Italy is also down. I mean, again, they're not quite as badly hit as other countries. So we are looking at enormous reductions. In volume terms, clearly Germany takes the biggest hits, 30 BCM down compared to the control case, or 30 BCM down this year. So it's all centred around what happens in Germany, really.
Yeah, and so looking at then the kind of the solidarity mechanisms and the interconnections and who can help who, if you like, you've picked out, I mean, not surprisingly, of course, because it's the largest number, Germany as an interesting case study. Can you just talk us through what you see in terms of the German case and their attempts to find ways to replace Russian flows and how the interactions with other countries might work?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of it will depend on how, because the biggest capacity flow between the two countries is Netherlands and Germany. So that kind of works both ways, but Netherlands can flow a lot of gas to Germany. So it depends on what comes into the Netherlands. Now, they're supposed to have a new floating regas terminal opened up at Eemshaven, which probably opened up in the fourth quarter this year. The German ones may come onto that, probably not until next year. So they have a little bit more gas coming in, but the Netherlands doesn't have any spare capacity to get more gas in until Eemshaven opens up. So then it's at his own demand, and obviously its own production in decline. So some of it partly depends on how much the Dutch will be prepared to cut their own demand to supply more gas to Germany. And it's not as though, absent Eemshaven, much additional gas can actually come in to the Netherlands to feed Germany. So ultimately, because it's a such a shock to the system, the only way to balance the market, if such a thing as the market balancing exists under this scenario, is to actually cut demand. And to the extent that Netherlands is prepared to share its demand cutting, obviously its demand is nowhere near the size of Germany's, then it can help Germany out. But without Netherlands cutting significantly, then the burden of adjustment is going to be on Germany.
And so you've mentioned as well that LNG terminals that are being constructed, purchased, you know, leased. What is the situation in Germany then? Can what they're doing around LNG terminals make any difference over the winter?
Probably. I mean, the talk about Bernicon maybe the end of this year, at least a couple of the FSRUs. There's Brunsbüttel, Wilhelmshaven, one at Lubmin, which is close to the Nord Stream landing point. But more likely, they may come on at best in the first quarter. So to really sort of to ramp up to sort of full capacity, then that's probably going to be later in 2023. So it's probably not going to come in time to help much this winter, other than the Eemshaven terminal in the Netherlands.
The implication then being that, you know, if the Russian gas goes off, as you've highlighted, and I would recommend people go and find the latest gas quarterly on our website, and there's a particularly good graph, figure 3.1, which characterizes demand destruction versus price response. I mean, clearly we're talking about very significant demand destruction, industrial interruptions in Germany in this scenario.
Yes, I mean, in terms of the sectors impacted, I mean, we kind of protected the heating sector, which is, you know, an assumption to make. So the burden of adjustment falls on power and industry. And, you know, mathematically, there's no gas left for any power generation in Germany, Slovakia, Hungary, Czech Republic. You can't generate any power using gas, not enough gas available. The industry is down dramatically in Germany, Slovakia and Hungary especially. So clearly, if there was energy saving, gas saving in the household and commercial sectors, then that could release some gas for the industry and power sectors. But there's only so much gas that can go around. So the big burden just is going to fall on power industry. And unless you can find other sources of fuel for power generation, then there's going to be blackouts.
Okay, yeah, pretty dramatic conclusions. And again, there's a table in the quarterly which highlights very clearly what happens in the control and the no-Russia scenarios. And as you say, the impact on power and industry is, well, I guess catastrophic is not too strong a word. Look, let's move on a little from that topic and talk about LNG more generally. Obviously, it's all very well having the regasification and import terminals, but you actually need to go and find the LNG as well. So what's happening just remind us what's been happening with LNG flows this year, both in Europe, but also, you know, on a global basis.
Well, in terms of the total LNG flows in the sort of 7 months to July, then we're up about 16.5 billion cubic metres on the previous year. So it's, if we remember back into 2021, there were clearly issues with a lot of, you know, maintenance, technical feed gas issues with multiple plants around the world, such that supply was actually lower in 2021, or available supply was lower than 2020, which obviously was a great part in the run-up in gas prices through 2021. Seems a distant memory now, $15 gas. But in 2022, a lot of that has reversed. The Norway plant has come back on, now back up at full capacity. A lot of the maintenance issues sort of went away. So the supply has been pretty strong. And all that supply and increased supply more has come to Europe. What we've seen because of high prices is, especially in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, you know, they've been priced out of the market. Japan, Korea, one's down a little bit. In Central South America, been fortunate in a sense that there's been more hydro, especially in Brazil. Argentina's gas production has been a bit better. So they've wanted less LNG, which has helped. But the big story has been in China, with the first of all, obviously the milder winter, but then the very slow economic activity, lockdowns. It looks as though China's overall gas demand has not really increased very much at all this year, if at all. And pipeline imports are up, domestic production's up. But a big fall in LNG imports to China, about 12.5 BCM in the first 7 months of the year. So that, in its sense, has been diverted to Europe. China's not really a price response. It's more that they don't need the LNG. So Europe's been extremely lucky, or the world's been extremely lucky, that China's not wanted the LNG. So the first 7 months of Europe LNG is 35 BCM higher. That's a total Europe, including UK and Turkey. And the UK's had a big role to play in this. 35 BCM higher than last year. So we've been very, very lucky that China's not wanted the LNG.
And so on that China point, given that we've highlighted it as one of the big assumptions in your modelling, I mean, Mikhail talked a little bit about it on our previous podcast, saying that, you know, she wasn't that, you know, optimistic for Chinese gas demand for the rest of the year. Are there any signs yet of any kind of rebound, or are we still on that kind of track of low imports, low import requirements?
We're still, looking at the early data for August, it's still a little bit lower than last year. It's not, this doesn't sound a bit odd, it's not as low as it was earlier in the year, if you see what I mean. So the fall compared to the previous year is not quite as bad as it was earlier in the year. But yeah, even picking up to last year's levels would seem to require an increase in economic activity in China to pull those imports up, because production is doing okay and a lot more is coming in from Russia on the Power-Siberia pipeline. So to get back to last year's levels, I think, would be an achievement for China for the rest of the year. But again, partly depends on the weather. If we get a cold winter in the Northern Hemisphere, then China's probably going to want quite a bit more.
So where does that leave us then, you know, in terms of a likely outcome for 2022? Can you see the EU reaching that 50 BCM increase, which it talked about earlier in the year?
Technically not the EU, but for Europe as a whole, this assumes China does actually, towards the end of the year, get back to last year's levels, but it leaves us even lower than we are now, year on year. And Europe as a whole, yes, it could well get back to a 50 BCM increase, which is what the EU targeted. But the EU on its own cannot just physically take 50 BCM more than it did last year. So as we said, the Northwest Europe terminals are already over capacity. So it's relying on the UK, in effect, to import a lot more LNG, which the UK has been doing. And then, in inverted commas, re-exporting that LNG to continental Europe down the Intercontinental and BBL. It's not the LNG molecules being re-exported. It's gas coming in at Bacton and off the national grid is being exported. But it's sort of displacing the gas needed, pipeline gas needed by more LNG coming in. So it is reliant on the, I mean, I think as we said in a quarter review or a document earlier on this year, that the UK, EU could survive by using the UK as a land bridge, and that's exactly what's happened.
I mean, just on that point, actually, there have been some problems at Bacton, haven't there, with the kind of impurities in the gas flow and the need for maintenance at the terminals. I know you've been looking at that a little bit. Can you talk us, without going into too much detail, can you talk us a little bit about what the problems are, whether they're long-term problems and what the situation is likely to be for the winter?
Again, as I caveated the other week, I'm not a technical expert, but the impurities is a polite way of putting it. I think there's a lot of stuff getting in the pipeline. I think obviously with the very high flows, then all sorts of stuff gets into pipelines in terms of excess liquids, or they just get dirty, they need cleaning. I think when flows are somewhat lower, then to actually go and clean them out, remove the impurities, it does not necessarily affect the overall flow, let's say, to Belgium that much. However, when it's flowing at more than full capacity, any attempt to, you need to reduce flows to get the impurities out, will impact the sort of level of flows. So it's a common issue in pipelines, all over the world. They sort of need cleaning out, and it just appears to be obviously more newsworthy because of the impact on flows this year, but also it's had a greater impact because the flows have been running at full capacity. So you'd hope they would resolve the problem.
Okay, so that's 2022 then. Let's move into 2023. How do you see the situation for LNG imports happening, well, for Europe, but also for the world? I mean, presumably we're going to have Freeport back by then, so there'll be a pretty big chunk of capacity coming back. But what about new LNG supply? What about the outlook for demand, you know, globally as well as in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Freeport may be coming back on a little bit earlier than we thought. Could be back on by October now, which would clearly help with the winter because it's a big terminal. We've lost quite a lot of LNG exports in the US because of that. So 2023 doesn't look too bad because with the turnaround in Freeport, that's going to help. Plus, we'll have Calcasieu Pass, the Venture Global One, and Sabine Pass Train 6, a full year impact of those, especially Calcasieu Pass. So that adds quite a bit to the flows. It looks like the Coral FLNG in Mozambique apparently is already taking on gas to liquefy. So that could be running at fairly small volumes by the last quarter of this year, so a full year of that. There's less good news in terms of the Senegal Mauritania project Tortue and the Tangguh train through Indonesia. Doesn't look now as though those will be on until the back end of 2023. So that's not quite such good news. But then we have, in terms of the countries or the projects with feed gas issues, Trinidad and Nigeria. Trinidad production does look as though it's going to pick up next year. Quite significantly, so they'll be able to export more. Nigeria is a bit of a wild card. Nobody really knows quite what's happening in terms of Nigeria feed gas, but it's looking slightly more promising. So with all that, we're looking at quite a big increase in available LNG supply next year. So that's kind of good news. So in terms of Europe, then with the new terminals on in Germany, Netherlands, and especially, but elsewhere in Europe, then we could see another reasonable increase in European flows next year, maybe on top of the 50 BCM plus this year, maybe another 20 BCM increase. So that is going to help the situation. That's even with sort of a recovery in Asia, a recovery in China, sort of back maybe to sort of the 2021 levels, so reversing the declines this year. So on that sort of scenario, and with some of the emerging Asian markets continuing to grow, the market could, I say balance, obviously it's balanced at relatively high prices because of what's happening in Russia. So, sort of fingers crossed, with supply increasing, then Europe could well get more LNG and also be able to accommodate more LNG.
Okay, I mean, but of course, in terms of the actual balance in Europe, everything is going to depend on, whether we're in that control scenario with some Russian flows or zero Russian flows, and I guess where we are with storage levels at the end of winter as well, and how much needs to be injected there to get us back to any kind of reasonable number before the winter of 23-24. Let's come back, though, to this winter in the UK, because we're sitting here, and the government, you've mentioned UK flows to Europe, but, within the UK, there's obviously security supply questions as well. There's been some discussion of power cuts in a really bad scenario. How do you see the UK's position as the potential exporter to Europe, but needing to potentially keep back gas for its own needs?
Yeah, again, it's, as usual, comes down to weather. It's difficult sitting here in 35 degrees of heat thinking about cold weather. But, I guess the bottom line is, National Grid have not produced their winter gas outlook yet, although they have produced their winter electricity outlook, which kind of seems the wrong way around. But as far as gas is concerned, then with a mild winter, again, the caveat, if it's like it was last year, then even with the no Russia flow scenario, the UK would probably be just about okay in terms of gas, because it could still import a lot of LNG, and European prices would no doubt be attracting LNG, and also still probably export a lot of that to continental Europe to help out there. So it'd still be in export mode, as we really were for most of the winter just gone. You get to a normal winter or worst case scenario, a cold winter, then under those circumstances, we'd normally be importing gas from continental Europe to balance our market. Under that scenario, it's difficult to see why gas should be imported from Europe when Europe has lost all its Russian gas. So a cold winter could be a particular tricky for the UK in terms of gas. On the power cut side, I think the electricity is slightly different because the UK sort of relies on Europe as the increasing number of electricity interconnectors to import electricity from Europe as well, especially in the cold winter. In actual fact, this year, the UK has been exporting a lot of electricity to France because France are promising nuclear. So not only have we been importing LNG to send gas down to Europe, we're importing LNG to burn our power plants to send electricity to France as well. So the UK has been a good neighbour to France and the EU this year. But cold weather, I think we would be struggling in the event of a worst-case scenario in Europe.
Well, let's hope our European friends bear that in mind as we enter December. But let's talk about the longer term, if we may, and just kind of when this current crisis, you know, irrespective of Russian flows, when the market might ease. What's the medium term outlook for LNG? And when do you see a real opportunity for the global market to rebalance at what one might regard as more normal prices, whatever normal means?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we return to our sort of control case where, you know, Nord Stream 1 gets back up to full capacity and we're sort of flowing at the take-or-pay levels of the remaining contracts to the extent they still deem to exist, then the markets do still look very tight through to about 26, 27 when we get the next huge supply surge of LNG coming on. There's possibly some of those projects could get delayed a little bit, especially Mozambique, but there's such a lot of LNG coming on. I mean, they're even talking about new projects starting up Congo, floating LNG now with ENI. So, but we're looking at, compared to 2021, by the time we get to 2027, 28, a 50% increase in available LNG supply, which is unheard of, is unprecedented, both in volume terms and percentage terms in the industry. So once that sort of comes on, by 2027, when we're sort of ramping up to the full volumes in those projects, then you'd expect the market to be able to rebalance reasonably successfully and prices to come down quite a lot. But again, the underlying assumption is we're still getting Russia flows at remaining contract levels into Europe. So the market does sort of rebalance by the late 2020s. And, you know, we get to the nirvana of prices less than $10, which seems a long way away now.
I guess you're trying to be optimistic, but that does sound quite a long way away. And that assumption about Russian gas flows at contract levels is probably quite optimistic as well. But anyway, we'll try and take a few positive notes out of that, at least for the medium term. But we're coming to the end of our time on the podcast. So, Mike, thanks a lot for your input and your interesting analysis. Again, I would encourage listeners to go to the OIS website. There's a lot of work that's been done around the impact of the Ukraine crisis on both European and global gas markets. The latest quarterly is just one example of that. So please do go and have a look. It's all free to download. But having said that, again, thank you, Mike. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.